Thank you for that warm introduction, and it's great to be down in Cork. And when the book was published, I was told it might be a year before I could get down to read here, and I'm very glad it was a cancellation, and Liberty's managed to get me the slot. Yesterday I was in Dublin at the War Memorial Gardens there in Island Bridge. It's kind of difficult to get at. Seamus Cashman was reading war poets from the First World War. He read for 3 hours to practically no one. You know, very few people came and attended, but people dropped in and dropped out, and there were some really great surprises. He had Irish poets, he had British poets, he had Canadians, Americans, and French and German, and it translated it to English. One of the poems that impressed me, not necessarily by the quality, but by the sentiment, was a patriotic poem by a German Jew, in which he praised the fatherland, and he was going to war at the time. Some strange... I can't remember the man's name. Anyway, I thought that I might start tonight from the collection with a poem about my own grandfather who was in that war. He was with Munster Fusilier. And like many others, he came home from the war to a changed Ireland, and you know, his life went downstream from there on. So this poem is... because those war veterans returning, they never really settled, you know. 49,400 Irishmen were killed in that war. Anyway, this one is Homer's Daughter. I inherit nothing more than dismay. When you fall in my father's house, there should be no man to avenge you. From the Odyssey, Book 1. Her father, a traveller, saw the world and came home blinded. Going out heroic, now he was beggared for a friend. Stranger in his home, outside he named constellations, Pegasus like treacle on his tongue, song password to oblivion. At Christmas, he told his daughter about Homer and put whiskey in the cat's milk. She envisaged battles with no standing room for mortals, Gallipolis without her heroes, falling like drunken cats around the kitchen floor. Trespassers. The round moon up and gaping, we crossed the widest field I ever walked. Fresh trenches dug from side to side, with tubers still in ridges, as yet no stalks, and waiting on a warm spring swell to heave their sprouting to the sky. We have come from rough lands onto cultivated ground. My older gun-shouldered companions disappointed. No game found worth the kill. I follow at a distance, step across each thrown-up mound, and listen to their easy talk. There is an old place half a mile from here, a fine house fallen into ruin, almost a sanctuary. That said, we end arriving at the door, open to whatever might come in. The dank interior reeks of death, windows with hanging spheres of glass, like bare-fanged hunting hounds, planked shutters pushed apart, each room corner festering a mass of cobwebs, pigeons everywhere, soon flushed to flight, A near split crack of gunshot echoes through the house. One bird splinters a frosted melon. A number of poems in the collection which are really about Rome and my own impressions of being in Rome when I was young and coming back after 30 years, and they end with funnily enough, with a poem called Palm Sunday. And I will get to that, but I'll kick off with the one called We Seek Directions. Our third visit and the journey north splinters history like an axe. Ancient farms and factories, old battlefields and hillside vineries, the abbey squatting on its mountain, each window frame small fraction of the 1 hour travel time from Naples by express track. Passing shots slowly for our arrival back at Station Point. Eternal city of the popes, you murmur, I concur. We shoulder bags across the platform and work a passage to the streets where brightly coloured Vespas buzz through pensioned saints and pilgrims. Still puzzled by the barbarians, we seek directions to the Colosseum. This poem is called Olivia, and it's set in the Colosseum. And when I was visiting the Colosseum, I observed a young girl who was posing for a shot, beautiful young Italian girl, and she had her thumb down, and I was just kind of struck by the gesture of what it meant. Anyway, Olivia. Poised on parapet above the deep arena, she displays her morning beauty to the crowd. Breath held, her figure draws attentions to its shape, and lens clutching, seekers take the bait. They would, if etiquette allowed, begin to show their pointed shots. But she is all for him, the chosen lover, at least until he posts her taken picture on the net. Olivia, observed alive in Rome, shines out her peers who come through ancient vomitorium to marvel this achievement, engineered perfection, brick bone stripped of marble glazing, Colosseum. Olivia, a short-lived smile which fronts the dark round abyss of desire, a pit of dungeon panting to the blistering sun, but only mortal visitors persist, intent upon the object, gaze. That left hand resting on a curve of hip bone, and right hand thrusting forward, twisted wrist. That one small opposable tongue caught pointing to her feet, his cell phone held before her like a blade. Here, this is poem is Palm Sunday, and just the background up to this is that I was in Rome on Palm Sunday, and I noticed a strange phenomenon that a lot of lovers were going around with palm and roses walking around the streets of Rome, and it's kind of the image stayed with me for a while, and it took a year before it actually shaped itself into a poem. So the Palm Sunday, There were in his mind many other shapes of people and places, of philosophies and poems. Charles Williams from the figure of Beatrice. All day along the city street, among the pilgrims and the pressing throng, I saw them walk with passion sprays like mistletoe, hung loosely by their untouched sides, lovers wrapped in one another's gaze, naked in the abandonment of creed, though dressed enough to thrill these human eyes. Creators of the chic, statement makers, of youth and beauty feeding the desire to be at once admired. And yet, the whittled branches of the old belief in something still in wait for us beyond this present carriage, the sublime. As I came early from the narrow way that opened on the piazza, the chiaroscura of the grand basilica cast before me like a peddler's throw, which scattered with enticements, tugs the ground, I caught the now enchantment of a Roman spring, the love of earth and heaven all at one with man. But I had known before the grave inspector's stalk, trappings of delight scooped up in seconds, pavements left tonsured at the light, the traders muffled, and in the shades, white eyes as giveaways of human life in fear of judgment. Cantor-like, the bells cried out across the terracotta sprawl of rooftops spread below us from the Spanish steps, the route by which we made our staged descent to where the youthful poet fretted out his call, the man who named truth beauty, wrenched. Was it enough to know, I wonder, this much and nothing more? Gregorian, the chant had swelled our hearts when the procession passed us through the door of Santa Maria Maggiore that morning. We inhaled centuries of smoke. That we might be found beautiful and not be damned had failed my comprehension until I gleaned the young of Rome embedded in delight, arm held but free of doubt. I saw them linger by the river among the stalls below the Castel Sant'Angelo. Pilate's question on my wetted lips and Keats' reply. Then looking up with keen perception, I caught Bernini's angels looking down, swooning creatures in ecstasy, bearing mighty feathered wings and fixed to the bridge rail, clasping the holy instruments of torture. I'd like to read three poems that are not in the collection, but we've written some of them just before it came out and some of them since. One of them goes back to the morning of Seamus Heaney's funeral. I got up on that morning and I said, I live in Rathfarnham, which is up the river from where Heaney was, where the mass was for Seamus Heaney, and I said to myself, I'm going to walk the river. I'm going to walk the river this morning down to the funeral. And anyway, this poem came out of it. Gutten abin, gutten nacht, the cellist silly, singing you to sleep. I had felt my shoulder shaken, words barked in my ear, telling me, awake, be up, move in a word still moving. Take the river path to Donnybrew, walk to Seamus Heaney's funeral mass. There was nothing I could do but travel then, the limpid dodder downstream to the sea. Risk it, he would spoken, carry a book of poetry, and if you feel like stopping, take it out. Then I heard many voices going to the gate, exclaimers of the proper word. The oration over, I would walk the riverbank again, as on that morning I arose. Follow its amble always down to Donnybrew, pass back and forth across the waters as the path requires. and under concrete arches seek your shade. Last night I dreamt I saw you move the flockish dog. A working dog you were, border collie, older than land race itself, penning in mountain metaphor, field thrown by water lullabies, the mummer's language folded then lifted into verse. The next poem is quite a new poem, and I'm writing a series on another great poet, Boris Pasternak. And this poem is really envisaged some starting his last great work, Dr. Zhivago. I read somewhere that he started it in a room filled with light. And Zhivago, of course, means everywhere. Beginning as we must, why not a room, a window radiant with light, a desk of paper sheets, a scattering of hope, with history arching into fiction, the poet bends above his page, his aperture, trees and fallow crossings brought to life, all dressed in white as he will have them show, his rapture slowly gaining pace. Across this picture frame, the world before him, each image chosen, nesting in the place he deems it hatch from, his crusts left out for fledgling comfort, now hefted from the ground, winged off to blank horizons, first winter berries like dots of crimson splashed in padded snow, this Russian splaying of the opened heart. And now for maybe something a bit comic. I was in London last autumn and in a cafe when a man handed a box to the girl behind the counter, and she looked in the box and she was really delighted, and she said something to him, and he went outside. I went up to pay the bill, and a response gave me the poem. It's called Not Every Day, the Dearest. It's not every day a man gives a girl a beautiful cheese, or makes the appetite stand up and cha-cha-cha. Darling, after Diodati, life ignites beyond the you, me, and precious sitting at our counter, supping Rivash tea, careful of his fingertips, his pursed lips, as yet no it in night nook or corner. My mother took pale cheddar after dark, scared of nightmares, churning sleep, but something stronger. I see my future self dance Latin now, sparkle round the void between us, conscious of the dark, shedding polished skins, which pleated stiff as armor, knotted once too tight for passion. Summoned by this knowledge, dearest, I'd like to sweetly drown any man who dares bring Stilton to this shock. The next poem is from towards the end of the collection, and it's called Storm Beach. Storm Beach is a beach which is prone to storms, and normally they get changed quite a bit, but sometimes seaside resorts have grown up there. And after the last, I think 2 years ago, there was a huge storm, it wrecked the hinge, and did a bit of damage to Bray, which I was quite surprised at. I was down the following week. Anyway, this one is Storm Beach, Bray, County Wicklow. 2014. January, the sea heaved, lunging at the strand, demanding restoration of the beach before the work of man shaped a resort with all desired amenities. Back to the unpredictability of place. Steep embankment of sand, stones, and thrown up a real surprise before a promenade was levelled out and laid between the river mouth and headland, jutting into shallows. Returning with the gaze of one who travelled back to walk the shore, I try imagining the ancient line, an open free place, a migratory world, forever changing with each season's flow. It took a Roman ship wreck in its stride and swooped up whole. Those who did not survive, the sailors buried in the dunes, with coin in mouth to pay whatever fare might fall. As children taught in this ocean-harried town, we fed the self-same gods, chanced slot machines in an Arcadia indifferent to our cares, not always in expectation of some lucky strike answering our prayers. We learnt the knack of looking both ways at the surge. The next poem is called Soundings, and I organise readings once a year for the Simon community. And this poem came out of those readings. Crossing over, you almost fail to notice how iron arches from each quay, its old frame set belly up above the river. Easing weight, the bridge bears all its passengers with grace, so walking over water equals flight. Natural dancer, you sidestep the incumbent on the halfpenny gallows, only slip a beat. The void between one long note sounding and another groan of bolted metal holding tight. I'm going to finish with the last poem in the collection. A lot of the collection is set along beaches, along the coast actually of County Dublin and down around Liscannor also. In Clare, but this one is set in Dunleary Harbour, and it's called Night Music. And anyone who's walked the harbour at night will know that for many years there's a musician down at the end of it, he's playing the banjo. Night Music. Tonight within the harbour walls, small craft seem almost motionless. Masks vertical like half-hammered nails against the glow or afterglow of sun. Distance playing her old tricks on us. Reefed naked for the night, we think these boats are going nowhere. Lazing on settled sea, anchored down and still. Chimes from every stopping place pass mouth to mouth, a faint determination to explore, move in formation. Some other music comes and goes. The banjo man is peppering his strings. Familiar reels skip freely from his fingers. The drop box open for our change. He sets his pitch before us, so we move always, imagining a distance from the end. Thank you for your attention.